I appreciate so much the invitation to come and speak today. I always look forward to coming to 4th Street. So many of you we have known through the years, and it's always good to renew our acquaintance with you and to have the opportunity to speak to you. What would you regard as the most famous river on earth? I suppose the answer to that question would depend, upon who you ask. Some might say that the most famous river is the Nile or the Amazon or perhaps the Ganges or the Danube, or maybe even the Mississippi River. But if you were to ask a fellow Christian or someone who professes Christianity, I think you would probably get a different answer than that. I think that you would get the answer that the Jordan River is the most famous river on earth. Now, it's not famous for its length, like the Nile or the Amazon, both of which are more than 4,000 miles long, even the Mississippi more than 2,000 miles long. The Jordan River is actually only 240 miles long by way of the river and about 120 miles long as the crow flies. So it's not noted for its length, and it's not noted because of some great city that is built upon its banks, like the Thames River is noted because the city of London is there upon its banks, or the Tiber because the city of Rome is built upon its banks, because there is no great city built upon the banks of the Jordan River. And it's not noted for its fertilizing value as the Nile is. The Great Nile, flows through Africa and it fertilizes its banks every year for those who live near the banks of the river. But the Nile, the Jordan River is not noted for that. It may fertilize a few communities, but that's not what it's noted for. And it's not famous because of any commercial enterprises, except maybe tourism. But really, that's not the thing that makes the Jordan River what I regard as the most famous river on earth. So you might ask, well, why is it so famous? Why do I regard it as the most famous river on earth? Well, I want to give three reasons. There are three reasons that I believe set it apart from any other river on earth and make it the most famous river of all. And in addition to those reasons, we want to make some comments and perhaps present some thoughts that will be challenging and helpful to us all. First of all, I want to suggest that this river is the most famous river on earth because of its peculiar physical characteristics. It's different from any other river on earth in several different aspects. We know that most rivers begin hundreds of feet above sea level and then empty into the sea somewhere along the line. But that's not true with the Jordan River. Actually, its source is just a short ways below Mount Hermon. And there are two icy streams that flow into it, and form the beginning of that river, and it's joined by a couple of other streams just a short distance away, and that's the source of the Jordan River. And it flows on south for just maybe 10 miles or so. And in Bible times, it formed a small lake called the Waters of Merom or Lake Huleh. Now that lake is no longer there. The Israelis had drained it, and it's no longer a lake. So the Jordan just flows right through. Nevertheless, you'll read in the Bible about the Waters of Merom or Lake Huleh, and you have an idea just where it is. And Lake Huleh was actually on the sea level. It was on the level with the sea, on the level with the Mediterranean Sea, which was 30 miles to the west. Well, the Jordan River continues on for another 10 miles or so. And in that distance, it drops 600 feet and flows into the Sea of Galilee. And at the point that it flows into the Sea of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee there is 680 feet below sea level. And yet it's a beautiful sea. It's called also in the Bible the Sea of Gennesaret or the Sea of Tiberias. It was named later in history for one of the Roman emperors, Tiberius. Nevertheless, it is a beautiful lake, 14 miles long and 7 miles wide and about 140 feet deep. And it flows, the Jordan flows into it from the north, and then at the south end of it, the Jordan continues on its journey, flowing out of it. It is a beautiful, thriving lake, a lake that fishermen depend upon. It supplies the livelihood for many fishermen and has done so for centuries. If you remember, even in New Testament times, in the life of Christ, much of his time was spent there in that region, and many fishermen are mentioned in the Bible, some of which became the disciples and even the apostles of the Lord. In fact, it's the place where Jesus did much of his teaching. Well, then, at the south end of the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River flows out of that down through a narrow gorge called the Jordan Valley for a distance of about 60 air miles. And it terminates when it flows into the Dead Sea. This is called the Jordan Valley. Now, one of the things that's unique about the Jordan River and the Jordan Valley is the fact that the Jordan River is the lowest river on the face of the earth. And the Jordan Valley is the lowest valley on the face of the earth. If you were to look from an airplane down at this valley, if you were high enough up, it would look like the Lord had just taken the giant axe and had chopped a great chasm right down in that region, because it's just a valley that drops down real deep. So it's unique in that respect. So the Jordan then flows into what we call the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is also unique. It is 1,300 feet below sea level at its top. 1,300 feet below sea level. And in addition to that, it is 1,300 feet deep. And this is a satellite picture of the Dead Sea. Now, right at the bottom here is not actually a part of the Dead Sea, or at least it was not in Bible times, because the Israelis have flooded a particular area there where they mine salt, because the Dead Sea is noted for salt. It is a big sea, 47 miles long and 10 miles wide. And as I said, 1,300 feet deep, and thus it's the lowest body of water on the face of the earth. Moreover, there is no outlet. It receives all of the water that Jordan can give it, and perhaps a few other streams around, but it does not have any outlet for water to flow out from. And so it just receives it all, and it gives none in return. And it's sometimes referred to as the Salton Sea, because its contents is 25% salt. And you know, I had heard that a lot, but I just wanted to see for myself. And so many years ago when I visited there, I took a small container, a glass container, filled it up with water from the Dead Sea, and took it back home with me and opened it and kept it over several months until all of the water had evaporated from that container. And sure enough, there was about one-fourth of the contents that was nothing but salt, about 25% salt. And you know, it's well named because actually very little life can survive in the Dead Sea. It's just too salty. Also, this is a picture of the Dead Sea right at a level where you can see along the shoreline. The white part that you see there, that's salt encrusted on the rocks and the ground round about it. You can walk around it and it'll crunch under your feet sometimes because there's just so much salt that is there. Now, that's one reason why I believe the Jordan River is so famous. But there's another reason that I believe that it's a famous and the most famous river on earth. And that's because of its peculiar characteristics and let me just go back for a moment and mention something in addition in regards to its peculiar characteristics. Actually, those characteristics can serve to teach us a lesson. And actually, there is a song in your songbook entitled "There Is a Sea." And I think it's on number 641 in your songbook. And it gives us a picture of this Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea, and it draws a lesson from that, which I think is a valuable lesson for us to learn. Remember that the Sea of Galilee is fresh and filled with life. It receives the water from Jordan and it lets the water out at the lower end of it. And it's just thriving with life. But the Dead Sea receives everything that the Jordan gives it, and it does not give anything in return, and it's dead. This song, "There Is a Sea," and I suspect you have sung that from time to time, it goes like this: "There is a sea which day by day receives the rippling rills and streams that spring from wells of God or fall from cedared hills. But what it thus receives, it gives with glad unsparing hand, a stream more wide with deeper tide flows on to lower land." Now that describes the Sea of Galilee. The second verse goes like this. There is a sea which day by day receives a fuller tide, but all the store it keeps, nor gives to shore nor sea beside. Its Jordan stream, now turned to brine, lies heavy as molten clay. Its dreadful name doth e'er proclaim that sea is waste and dead. That's the Dead Sea. Now the application. Which shall it be for you or me who God's goods gifts obtain? Shall we accept for self alone or take to give again? For he who once was rich indeed laid all his glory down, that by his grace our ransom race should share his wealth and crown. So, which are you like? The Sea of Galilee that receives the blessings and passes them on? Or are you like the Dead Sea that receives all that God can give and keeps it to ourselves and fails to pass it on to others? So it's a good thought. But again, I want to suggest that there's another thing that the Bible, of course, teaches, that we are to be generous in our giving. In James 1, verse 17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Also in Matthew 10, and verse 8, Jesus said, freely you have received, freely give. In Acts 20 and verse 38, Paul said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. That is, he quoted Jesus as saying that. Now, a second reason why I consider the Jordan River to be the most famous river on earth is because of the historical events that are connected with it. There are some remarkable events connected with the Jordan River. First of all, let's look at the time when Israel, having wandered for 40 years in the wilderness after they had been delivered out of Egyptian bondage and had passed through that wilderness wanderings for 40 years, finally come to the Jordan River. They come to a place called the Plains of Moab, just above where the Jordan River empties into the Dead Sea. And at this point, you remember that Moses was sent by God up on Mount Nebo, where he was able from Pisgah's height to view the Promised Land. I don't know whether he could see it with his natural eye or whether God permitted him in some miraculous way to see all of the Promised Land that the Israelites would inherit. But he was able to see it one way or the other. And then he died there. And the Bible tells us that he was buried by the angels somewhere in the mountains in that area. Nobody knows where it is, but he was buried there in the mountain, I suppose Mount Nebo. The place of crossing of the Israelites was just above where the Jordan River empties into the Dead Sea. Moses went up into Mount Nebo, and this is pointing out just about where Mount Nebo is located there on the map, where he could view the Promised Land. After he left and died, Israelites mourned for Moses for a period of 30 days. And then the leadership was turned over to Joshua, and it was time for them to cross over the river. So the command was given first to Joshua and then from Joshua to the elders of the children of Israel. In Joshua 1 and verse 11, Joshua told them, pass through the host and command the people, saying, prepare your victuals, for within 3 days ye shall pass over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God giveth you to possess it. So within 3 days they were going to get across this river. Now, you know, in Joshua 3 and verse 18, tells us something that makes us realize that this command was not as simple as you might think. He says, for Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of the harvest. This was the spring of the year. This was the time of harvest. And, of course, the Jordan was at its highest as far as depth is concerned, and at its wildest as well. And so, and scholars tell us that it could have been from a half a mile to a mile wide at this point. Jordan is a small river, relatively speaking, but in flood season, it can get to be pretty wild. In fact, it may have looked something like this. Don't know, but it would have been a raging river, muddy and wide, and yet God told them, now you get down and cross this river. So it took a lot of faith for them to do that. But you remember, the Bible tells us that as soon as the priests stepped into the edge of the river, that God opened up the way. He rolled back the river into a heap and kept it from flowing on, and they passed through on dry ground, just like they did, you know, when they left Egypt and came through the Red Sea. In Joshua 3:14 through 17, it said, so it was, when the people set out from their camp to pass over the Jordan, when the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as those bore the Ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the Ark dipped in the edge of the water, for Jordan overflows all of its banks during the whole time of harvest, that the waters which came down from upstream stood still and rose in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zaratan. So the waters that went down into the sea of Araba, the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people crossed over opposite Jericho. Then the priests that bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan. And all Israel crossed over on dry ground until all the people that crossed completely had crossed completely over the Jordan. Now that's quite a miracle. And someone might say, well, that's just too much of a miracle for me. I just can't believe that that kind of a miracle could happen. Well, why not? I mean, after all, if God was able to create the heavens and the earth, surely he could perform a miracle like this. Moreover, he had performed a similar miracle when they left Egypt some 40 years before, when he opened up the waters of the Red Sea for them all to pass through from Egypt into the wilderness. So surely, you know, if there was reason enough, God would perform this type of a miracle. Now, there was reason enough. In fact, you remember that in Joshua 3 and verse 7, the Lord said unto Joshua, this day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. You know, one of the ways that God impressed the people who left Egypt with the fact that he was with Moses and that Moses was to be their guide was by opening up the Red Sea, performing that great miracle that they all observed and established the authority of Moses by doing so. Well, he's now establishing the authority of Joshua in a similar way, by opening up the waters of Jordan and allowing the Israelites to pass through the river that way. And so he establishes, magnifies Joshua in the eyes of the people in so doing. Now, you know, you might ask yourself the question, how is it that the Canaanites, the enemies of the Israelites, were not on the other side? Why weren't they there to beat them and to fight against them and to keep them from crossing over? Well, there are several reasons. First of all, this was the harvest time, and they would have been busy in their harvest for one thing. And in the second place, they probably were not worried. They probably thought that surely they wouldn't be able to get across the river at this stage. And that may be the reason. And there's another reason, too. In Joshua 5 at verse 1, it came to pass when all the kings of the Amorites, which were on the side of the Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel until we were passed over, that their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them anymore because of the children of Israel. Now, no doubt they had already heard about the fact that these slaves from Egypt had defeated the mighty kingdom of Egypt. That was terribly impressive. And they had heard how that the Israelites had defeated the kings of Sihon and Og on the east side of Jordan as they were coming down. And so they were already very afraid and concerned over that. And now when this happens, their hearts melted. There was no fight in them. There was no resistance. They were scared to death. And so they were not there to oppose them. So Israel then, from this point, went on to conquer the land under the leadership of Joshua and, of course, by the help of God. So here is one historical event that certainly makes Jordan a very important river, but there are more. Elijah's crossing of Jordan took place about 650 years later on, 850 BC, and it was a very important occasion as well. You remember who Elijah was. Elijah, you know, was a prophet, and he lived during the days of Ahaz and Jezebel, and they were wicked kings of Samaria. They had introduced Baal worship into the land, and they were just ungodly and terrible. And they had their own prophets. There were many, many prophets of Baal that were exercising their religion throughout the northern kingdom. And Elijah was opposing all of that. He was a very unpopular man among the people of Samaria for that reason. But he did his job well. He was very brave. He was very faithful in all that he did. At the end of his ministry, a very strange and remarkable thing took place, recorded here in 2 Kings chapter 2, beginning in verse 6. It said, Elijah said unto him, and the him here is Elisha. Elisha was his servant and a young man who was a young prophet, but he was kind of being tutored by Elijah. So Elijah said unto him, that is to Elisha, he knew God had somehow revealed to him that the time of his end had come. But he didn't want Elisha to be with him when that happened. So he said to him, tarry, I pray thee, hear it, for the Lord has sent me to Jordan And he said, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. He went with him. And they too went on, and 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood to view afar off. And they too stood by Jordan. So he left one place and went down to another place and tried to get Elisha to stay there, but Elisha wouldn't. He was going to stick right with him all the way. He suspected that, you know, something important was going to happen. Now, these 50 prophets were, this is a school of prophets that, you know, that had all these young prophets in it. And so when they heard about it, they followed at a distance, stood to view afar off. And then they too stood by Jordan. That is, Elijah and Elisha came to the Jordan River and stood there. And Elijah took his mantle and wrapped it together and smote the waters, and they were divided hither and thither, so that they went over on dry ground. So, you know, a similar miracle here. And it came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, and parted them both asunder. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Can you imagine that? You think about Elisha viewing that while they were walking along. It was miracle enough for him to open up the waters of Jordan, walk through dry land, getting on the other side then as they were walking on. Suddenly, here were horses and a chariot of fire that swooped down and picked up Elijah and carried away into heaven. What a remarkable sight that was. And what an honor it was for this man, Elijah, not to face death like other men did, but to be carried into heaven as he was in a chariot of fire. It seems to me that God wanted the world to know just what he thought of such a man as Joshua, as Elijah. So the Jordan River, of course, is famous because of that event. The crossing was about the same place where the Israelites had crossed several hundred years before that. Now, Elisha then takes up the mantle of his master, Elijah, and he goes back to the Jordan. And he took the mantle of Elijah that fell from him and smote the waters and said, where is the Lord God of Elijah? And when he also had smitten the waters, they parted hither and thither, and Elisha went over. So now he's taking the place. He is the successor to Elijah. All right, another historical event that distinguishes the Jordan River as being the most famous of all is the preaching of John the Baptist. And that took place about, 830 years later. John the Baptist came along about 29 B.C., in Matthew, or in Malachi, the prophet Malachi, chapter 3 and verse 1, said, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Lord whom you seek shall suddenly come. Well, that messenger that he speaks of was John the Baptist. In fact, again, in Malachi 4 and verse 5, he said, behold, I will send Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Now, this was not the literal Elijah that he was sending to the earth. This was another prophet that he was calling Elijah because he would be a prophet like Elijah. He would be the kind of a prophet Elijah was, and he would come to prepare the way for the Lord. In Mark 1, verses 1 through 5, we find this statement made concerning him. The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. As it is written in the prophets, behold, I send my messenger before my face, which shall prepare thy way before thee. The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make his path straight. John did baptize in the wilderness and preached the baptism of repentance for the remission of sins. And there went out unto him all the land of Judea and they of Jerusalem, and were all baptized of him in the river of Jordan, confessing their sins. This was a great man. John was the second Elijah. He came in the spirit and power of Elijah. Jesus mentions that in Matthew 17. Jesus answered and said unto them, Elias, or Elijah, truly shall first come and restore all things. But I say unto you that Elias is come already, and they knew him not. Then the disciples understood that he spake unto them of John the Baptist. So here is a great prophet, John the Baptist, that comes and he does his work in the Jordan Valley. He baptizes people in the Jordan River. And many came to be baptized by John in the Jordan. In Matthew 3, 5 and 6, it says, there went out unto him Jerusalem and all Judea and all the region around about Jordan, and were baptized of him in Jordan, confessing their sins. You know, where he baptized was, you know, not too terribly far from Jerusalem. And it was just before the, you know, in the area just above where it empties, the Jordan empties into the Dead Sea. And it's in the wilderness of Judea. And for crowds, he didn't go into the cities. The cities came out to him. And the crowds would gather together, and you think about the heat, the suffocating heat, and the gnats and the mosquitoes, and yet they came anyway, and they listened to him, and they responded to him, and were baptized of him. Many of them were. What a great prophet, what a great preacher he was. Jesus complimented him as a great prophet. He said, but what went ye out for to see? A prophet? Yes, I say to you, and more than a prophet. For this is he of whom it is written, behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare thy way before thee. Verily I say unto you, among them that are born of women, there hath not risen a greater than John the Baptist. What a great tribute was made to him. One day, a young man of about 30 came to John. There cometh Jesus from Galilee to Jordan unto John to be baptized of him. But John forbade him, saying, I have need to be baptized of thee, and comest thou to me? And Jesus answering said unto him, suffer it to be so now, for thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness. And he suffered him. And so John baptized the Son of God in the river of Jordan. And the same time the Spirit descended upon Jesus from heaven. And God speaks audibly from heaven, saying, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. We read in Matthew 3, beginning in verse 16, and Jesus, when he was baptized, went up straightway out of the water, and lo, the heavens were opened unto him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting upon him, and a voice from heaven saying, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. This is the last, actually, the crowning glory of events that transpired in the River of Jordan. So I want to present just briefly the third reason why I believe the Jordan is the most famous river on earth, and that is because of the association of thoughts connected with it in the minds of the believers. You know, the Israelites had journeyed from Egypt all the way to Canaan. And that journey actually becomes a historical type of things that happen today. God painted a lot of pictures in Old Testament times by means of types and shadows, which today we see their true fulfillment. And this is one of them. It serves as a historical type of our spiritual journey today. For example, Egypt was a type of the bondage of sin. They were in bondage to sin in Egypt. And so Egypt was a type of that bondage. And the Red Sea, which they crossed, was a type of baptism. 1 Corinthians 10, Paul tells us that. They were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea. It is a type of deliverance. They were delivered from Egypt, delivered from their bondage. And the wilderness into which they were delivered was a type of the church. Actually, their experiences in the wilderness was a type of the journey of Christians, the experiences that Christians have as we sojourn in this life. And then the Jordan that they came to, which separated between them and their promised land, was actually a type of death for us. They had to pass through Jordan to get to their promised land, just like we have to pass through death in order to cross over into our promised land. And Canaan was a type of heaven. And so we have to cross our Jordan as well. And we sing some songs that reflect that idea. On Jordan's stormy banks I stand and cast a wishful eye to Canaan's fair and happy land where my possessions lie. Or we sing, just beyond the rolling river lies a bright and sunny land where the saved with Christ are dwelling, a united happy band. Or occasionally we sing that song, you don't have to cross Jordan alone. Just like God, through opening up the waters of Jordan, delivered the Israelites, so I believe God helps each saint as we face death to lead us over that river very safely. Some people, even some Christians, view death as a dreaded thing, just like maybe the Israelites might have dreaded crossing this muddy river, which would have washed them into the Dead Sea. Sometimes we think of death in that way, that it's just like a muddy river. It's just something dreaded, something terrible for us to cross. But that's not what God wants us to think. He wants us to view the crossing over of our Jordan in a similar way to the way that they crossed their Jordan. That is, to cross it safely, to cross it calmly, and to enter into our promised rest. To me, that is a beautiful thought, and it's something that I think all of us ought to have. Our time is up, and I leave it with you, and I hope these thoughts will help us all to appreciate the Jordan River a little bit better. Do we have a song of invitation for now? Okay. If you're here and you have not prepared yourself in such a way so as to cross the Jordan of death in the kind of way that you would like to cross it, if you aren't a Christian, or as a Christian, if you're not prepared, you know, to do that, you can start today by responding to the invitation, by coming forward. And if you're a Christian and you're out of duty, you can confess your faults and ask for the prayers of the church and be restored to fellowship. If you're not a Christian, you can become one even now by coming, confessing your faith and being baptized into Christ. Will you do that while together we stand? While we stand.